Welcome back to Via the Source, where you can get news about the entire NFL and, of course, the Miami Dolphins. Fins up, here's Steven, your host.
Okay, guys, you know when you were playing fantasy football and you have a slim lead, like 3 points, and they have two people playing, you know there's absolutely no chance. You're projected to lose by like 10 points, but you stay watching and it's just really painful and it's really hard to watch. Or, you know, when you're at the gym and someone's lifting a huge amount of weight, but their form is kind of bad, they're rounding their back, you're kind of cringing, you know that they could get hurt, and it's really painful to watch. Or, you know that scene in I Am Legend when he has to kill his dog? You know, those are really hard to watch. And this past game between the Miami Dolphins and the New England Patriots was very hard to watch in the same way. So, in this episode, I'm going to be going over my recap of the New England Patriots versus the Miami Dolphins game. Just kind of touch on it. And, you know, the Dolphins were 3-0. The hopes were high. The Patriots were coming in 1-2. They needed this win. It was in Foxborough. And if you listen to my preview episode, I had mentioned some stats showing just how good Tom Brady is when he plays at home. It is a ridiculous amount of wins compared to his losses that he gets at home. And in his career, he was 14-1 against the Miami Dolphins when he was playing at home. Ryan Tannehill had never won a game in Foxborough. So those numbers were in the back of my mind. Before this game started, I was like, okay, this is going to be a tough game, despite how bad the Patriots looked against the Lions, despite how good the Miami Dolphins had looked against their previous three opponents. I knew that this game was very important to the New England Patriots, and at home, one of the most effective offensive systems, one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, and arguably the greatest coach of all time, the odds were still going to be that the Patriots were the favorites to win this game, and that's how I was heading into it. Well, I was not expecting a complete blowout or lack of effort on the Miami side. Like we saw in this game, the final score was 38-7. And at one point, the Patriots had a 38-0 lead before Brock Osweiler came in and threw a touchdown pass to Frank Gore, which was very meaningless. And the fact that Brock Osweiler is even in the game shows just how bad it got out of hand. Now, I start every episode with who gets the game ball, and I try to give it to a Miami player each time. So there may still be times where I give it to a Miami player, even if they lost a game, if they had a strong outing. But in this game, there's nobody on the Miami side who I think deserves a game ball in this one. So I'm going to go with the New England Patriots rookie running back, Sony Michel. Big day, 112 yards rushing, a touchdown where he went in untouched. And if you listen to my preview episode, I talked about the keys to victory. One of them was containing Sony Michel. I found this interesting fact that I thought carried a lot of weight. And if you play fantasy football or if you follow the Patriots, you know this, that they have a guy, a running back who is going to be their pass catcher, whether it was James White or whoever else it was. And then they're going to have a power back. That was the LeGarrette Blount for a few years. That was Deion Lewis last year, Stevon Ridley, Ben Jarvis Green Ellis, guys like that in the past. That was their ground and pound guy. Well, I found out when their lead rusher, when their like actual running back gets over 70 yards receiving, they had not lost a game since 2012. Yeah, the last time they had a running back get over 70 yards and lose was in 2012, and it was Stevon Ridley. So I was watching this game, and I knew we had to keep Sony Michel on lock, because if the Patriots get their ground game going, it's over. And in the first drive, Sony Michel was getting 10 yards at a time, 10 yards, 10 yards. Before the half, he hit the 70-yard mark, and it was already out of reach. And I was like, that's a wrap. If we can't stop their lead rusher, the game's over. And that's kind of how it went for the rest of the game. The receivers were held in check for the most part. Their lead receiver was actually Philip Dorsett, who had 55 yards receiving. He had a nice touchdown pass where Xavien Howard looked a little bit lost. He kind of got beat on that one play for sure. But one guy who I said that I thought was going to have a successful day indeed ended up having a successful day, and it was James White. I expected James White to have a big day because of the problems we have at linebacker, the problems we have tackling these shifty guys. I figured that New England wanted to get him incorporated, and that they did, because he had 44 yards rushing on the ground, 5.5 yards a carry. Had a touchdown on the ground in which he made Robert Quinn look silly, absolutely broke his ankles. And then he had another 68 yards receiving and a touchdown there. And he caught a beautiful pass from Tom Brady that you just have to say that He's a legend, and he's going to make some incredible throws. And that was one very, very nice-looking throw that he did to James White. Rob Gronkowski, I expected him to have more of an impact in this game. He was actually kept in check for the most part, 44 yards receiving on four catches. So Rob Gronkowski was not that big of an issue in this game. So that is, I guess, some silver lining that they weren't able to get Rob Gronkowski in this, and the defense kept him in check. So if you're looking at this game, it's basically was dominated by two running backs. So you have to be thinking, well, then how did Miami lose so badly? And I think the root of this problem, it goes back to Miami's offense, because Miami's offense had an atrocious performance. It was miserable on the offensive side of the ball, and it's something that I hope we can figure out and get it fixed. I think the majority of the blame for this has to go to the play calling. This one has to fall on the coaching, first of all, because I think the play calling was way too vanilla in this game. There was no urgency. We were down and things weren't changing. They weren't adapting to what New England was doing. A lot of short check down routes, giving up on third downs over and over. It takes a toll not only on the team, but the fans' morale, seeing that it's third down and there's no attempt to even get a ball downfield is frustrating to see. It was just a very vanilla offense. And one thing that was major and very concerning was that heading into this season, Kenyon Drake was regarded as our superstar. He was our best offensive threat, and it seemed like it was a consensus thing that Kenyon Drake was that guy. In this game, Kenyon Drake only had 3 carries for 3 yards, which is ridiculous. In the last game, Kenyon Drake had 5 carries for 3 yards. For some reason, Kenyon Drake is not getting enough touches, and I cannot say why. In this game, I understand eventually we were going to have to abandon the run. The score was getting way too out of hand. We had to abandon the run. But for Kenyon Drake to only get 3 carries in this game is a little mind-blowing, and I think that is a major issue. There is no balance right now in the offense. And I can't say that's on Drake. So I know some people are hating on Drake. How are you only getting 3 yards in a game? It doesn't fall on Drake. It falls on one that he's not getting enough opportunities to get something to work with. And then the offensive line was not helping him much. And the few times he did get the ball, he was getting stuffed. And it wasn't on him. And this was a team that Kerryon Johnson just put 100 yards on. So I know that there is a way to get Kenyon Drake incorporated into this game. And then as for quarterback Ryan Tannehill, he had a pretty bad outing as well in this one. He finished the game 11 completions out of 20 attempts, 100 yards in total, no touchdowns. He had a very bad interception where he severely underthrew a pass to Albert Wilson, and then he had another just a really bad fumble on a snap that just went right through his hands. So this was also a very bad outing for Ryan Tannehill as well. And that kind of brings me to another point. We abandoned the run. We're down 38. And I remember years ago in 2015 when the Jaguars were very bad, and they were getting stomped on by teams. Blake Bortles was putting up massive numbers because they were still getting garbage time points. They were able to still move the ball and, you know, make an attempt to get downfield. But in this game, for us to lose 38-7 and have the game so out of reach and still not be able to put any type of points or any type of yards up, it was a little bit concerning. That's where I get a little bit confused, because we abandoned the run. And not only that, we only had 100 yards passing. That cannot be happening. And right now, Miami is ranked 30th in total offense. So there definitely are some concerns on the offensive side of the ball. And I think those concerns on the offensive side of the ball, they affect the defense, because I think the defense came out strong at the beginning. They held the Patriots to a field goal, and that was very nice. They came back. Bobby McCain got a big pick. But then eventually, if the offense isn't there and you're asking the Dolphins defense to stop just an elite level offense over and over and over, eventually they're going to crack, and you need to start putting some points on the board. So I think this one falls predominantly on the offense, but neither side of the ball looked great. And this has me concerned a little bit moving forward, because they have a tough schedule ahead. The next game's against the Cincinnati Bengals, a team that is red hot, especially offensively. Andy Dalton is looking pretty good. They have a dual threat running back system, very similar to the one that we face with New England right now. They're Sony Michel. The Bengals is going to be Joe Mixon. That's their ground and pound guy, and I think that he is severely underrated. I think he should be in the same conversation as the other running backs in this draft class, including Kareem Hunt, including Alvin Kamara, including Leonard Fournette. I think Joe Mixon is right up there, should be included included with them. And then they have Giovanni Bernard, who is a guy who is almost identical in the skill set to James White. So it's going to be a very similar matchup. And yeah, they don't have Gronkowski, but they have AJ Green, a guy who torched us on Thursday Night Football and was mossing Xavier Howard. So I can't stress enough how deadly AJ Green is. He is a top three receiver in this league. He has been consistent, and the only thing that's ever stopped this man has been injuries. He is a very, very talented receiver, and Andy Dalton owes a lot to him. So he is going to be the priority for this next game. That's just a little tip. And then as we move forward to the next game after that, we have the Chicago Bears. And the Chicago Bears are a defensive powerhouse. Khalil Mack has completely transformed this defense and made him a threat. And the way the offense is playing, I look at that matchup and I am terrified. Something needs to change quick. And that's just only on the Bears' defensive side of the ball. I think even their offense is starting to gain momentum. You got Mitch Trubisky starting to get comfortable in this offense. You have Tariq Cohen, a guy who is very hard to tackle. He is basically Jakeem Grant. For the people who are not familiar with Tariq Cohen, that is the easiest comparison. Then they have Taylor Gabriel, a guy who is extremely shifty. He's going to be their Albert Wilson. And then they have Trey Burton, very underrated tight end as well. And they have Allen Robinson. And we, I think, all remember what he did to us back in 2015. He is a very talented and, you know, athletic receiver, a guy who could break out at any moment. So I'm seeing these next few games and the way the momentum shifted after this game, and I'm a little bit concerned that this could affect the trajectory of the entire season. And while I'm still hopeful, I still have the Dolphins ceiling at around a sneak into the playoffs type of team. I don't have them as a contender necessarily for a Super Bowl. I still think there's plenty of holes. We're losing players that are getting injured. Daniel Kilgore's on the IR. Josh Sitton's on the IR. Bobby McCain's out for 2 weeks. It's going to be huge against a team that I just said has AJ Green. They're going to be moving it around, getting it to John Ross now. It just seems to be unraveling a little bit, and I am concerned, but this is going to be the bounce back game. This game that is coming up against the Bengals is going to tell us how the Dolphins are going to be for the rest of the season. If they can turn around, and I'm not even saying they have to win this game because this Bengals team is very good, but what they have to do is they have to come out and show that they can bounce back and play well. That is what we need. If it is another performance where the team gets dominated, then we're going to have to eventually start to think about the reset. But I'm not saying that I don't think the Dolphins could bounce back against the Bengals. I am still very hopeful. What I saw in the first three games was pretty great. I think they just need to get a little bit more explosive on offense, really reach into that playbook, and just start having fun with it, start getting creative with it. The Chiefs look incredibly creative with their offensive playbook. They are using Tyreek Hill everywhere. Travis Kelce is being put on routes like a receiver. I think this is a team that we should strive to be like offensively. They look really creative. They look like they're having fun. They're explosive. And those are just the type of offenses that I would love to see Miami have at one point in time. So that's how I'm going to wrap up the episode, guys. Let me know what you think. Leave some comments. Let me know who you think is to blame for this game. Is it the offense? Is it the defense? Is it Gase, Tannehill? Who was it? What was the reason? Or was it just New England being very good? But until next time, guys, I'm Steven Masso, and this was Via the Source.